Chinese bank lending growth came in at the lowest on record. New household loans dropped by an enormous amount. Banks are closing their loan books. Property developers are in danger of defaulting inside and outside the country. A whole mess of data just came out from China that just is not looking good, somehow worse than before. And at the same time, the Communist Party over there and the government, which just had their big meetings last week, they seem utterly lost on what to do, just pumping out the same things that haven't worked. Xi Jinping, for his part, he's still doing all the crazy stuff, breaking with long-standing norms and party traditions, consolidating his power as if to say, I've taken care of what I need to take care of, so let's just see where all this economic and financial mess leads us to. The risk of a disorderly unwind in China, I hate to say it, is actually rising here. It's become non-trivial. As the situation continues in the economy as well as the financial system, to no effect from government stimulus, you have to wonder where all of this is actually going to go. As far as the government is concerned, their first tactic is the same one that we see all around the Western world, and that is confidence, blowing smoke up your butt, telling you that everything is just fine. Back on February 2nd, in China's People's Daily, which is a government mouthpiece, there was an article that headlined said, there is an atmosphere of optimism throughout the country. And you just have to laugh. In fact, most of the Chinese people that were commenting on their article before the censors shut it down were saying, are you kidding me? Because there is not a whole lot of optimism in China. And the recent statistics we got, a whole bunch of it, shows that is absolutely not the case. We'll start with the property sector and home prices, because home prices have not only been an area of focus for outsiders looking at the risks of China, and remember, China is the biggest risk to the global system. I keep saying that, and unfortunately, the Chinese keep proving me correct. So not only is it the biggest attention grabber for people on the outside looking in, it's also one of the biggest problems in China's economy, as household spending goes as household savings does, which is heavily tied to the property sector. According to the latest statistics from the National Bureau of Statistics in China, home prices actually decelerated to the downside. No optimism here. Month over month, the 70-city price index was down 0.3%, which matches the January decline. Year over year, 1.4%, minus 1.4%. which is the worst since last year when China was coming out of its lockdowns. And remember, reopening was supposed to have solved all of this. Reopening was the magic elixir that got China back on track, all of its facets, economic as well as financial. Well, reopening seems like a distant memory because it was a long time ago and it left basically no imprint. Before we get too much further into the mess that is China, I did want to let you know that Eurodollar University, we're planning on having a spring sale coming up at the end of next week. Best prices on all our research subscriptions as well as membership bundles. We're talking about memberships where we get into the background behind the Eurodollar system, what money is, the basics, presentations, Q&As, conversations, all of that. Plus the daily briefing and the daily deep dive analysis where we take everything much further than we get to here on YouTube. Again, spring sale coming up at the end of next week. Keep your eye out for that. As far as the big statistics that came out, I keep focusing on China's credit and banking because that's where everything, the rubber hits the road, so to speak. And the Chinese PBOC, the central bank, is supposed to release its financial statistics report as well as the total social financing numbers within a five-day window. And usually they're pretty good about it. But they waited until the absolute last minute this week to report on these credit statistics, which raised a lot of eyebrows. In fact, this is the first time they've been delayed this long, right up until the end of that window, since 2020. And what was contained within these reports shows exactly why. Because the thought was they're hiding something or they don't want to report something. And the numbers that came out show exactly why that was. RMB loan stock, so the total amount of Chinese loans in their own local currency, grew at a 10.1% rate, which again sounds terrific, but that's another record low. And that's well below the 10.4% record low that was in January. So we're accelerating to the downside here in overall R&B loan stock. The big one, I think, is household loans, because household loans, of course, tied to mortgages, therefore the property sector. And household loans absolutely smashed, minus 590.7 billion RMB, which is, in my data, the worst monthly decline on record, certainly for the month of February. It erases what had been a pileup of lending in January, which was, it looks like, many households getting in some of their mortgages before the Golden Week holiday in February. But when you put January and February together, you got the increase in January, the big decline in February. It somehow works out to less than last year, which was not a good start for Chinese households, household mortgages, therefore the property sector. And it only gets worse from here because we got the total social financing statistics, including something called aggregate financing to the real economy, which is China's way of trying to find out all of the credit that flows through the system, whether it be through the banks, through equity, through wealth management products or shadow banking, all of it. But aggregate financing to the real economy in the month of February 2024, just 1.56 trillion. Now that's down big from January, which is not unusual because January, lots of credit happens in January. All the best customers get all of the loans and their loan needs for the year filled out in January's. February though, 1.56 trillion, that's 51% less than last February when the government was trying to get the economy on the right foot for reopening, and that didn't even work. In terms of just RMB loans, this is the bank lending stuff. Banks are not lending. This is a theme that I've come back to repeatedly over the last 6 months or so. In the face of so much quote-unquote stimulus, the banking system just doesn't respond to it, which has raised a whole bunch of really bad questions, bad scenarios, starting with the PBOC and questions about its transmission mechanism. As I said in a recent video, how it puts the PBOC on par with all of its Western counterparts. That we all have to question these central banks' transmission mechanisms because when banks are working and extending loans, central banks look like they're all-powerful institutions. When banks no longer want to do that, suddenly central banks, we have to question their transmission mechanism because they're no longer so powerful. At least it's revealed that they're no longer so powerful, when in fact, they probably never were at any point, including the PBOC. So despite massive stimulus, even monetary stimulus at the end of last year, talking about the MLF, you know, loans to other depository corporations, which is the primary source of funding from the PBOC to the banking system, skyrocketed at the end of last year. Banking system continues to do minimal as far as loans go. Now, PBOC Governor Pan Gongsheng said, well, we've got room to do more stimulus. We could do more RR cuts. We could do more of the other things that we've been doing that have had absolutely no effect on the banking system or the real economy. Speaking about the growth targets that came out of the National People's Congress, which I'll get to at the end of this video, Pan said, you know what? Those targets are ambitious, but they are achievable. And they weren't even all that great as far as targets go, just around 5%. And there are all sorts of questions about whether or not they'll be achievable, given all of the behavior that we see in the banking system. One good thing so far is we don't see any sign of a real liquidity event building. I've talked about repo rates, and there's something odd going on in repo, which requires a little bit more study. I'll get to that in a future video. But as of right now, we don't see repo rates skyrocketing. You don't see SHIBOR rates skyrocketing. So the liquidity situation seems to be relatively stable, which is a good sign. However, with banks refusing to lend, and we'll get to why that is, that's the bad sign as far as the economy goes. It means their balance sheets are being constrained by some factor, a combination of factors, likely risk perceptions. Our perception of China as the biggest risk to the global economy seems to be validated from inside the economy by Chinese banks. A huge reason why Chinese banks don't want to lend seems obvious here. Real estate developers, the property sector, the major developers continue to have all sorts of trouble, including a name that came up just recently. And I did a video on this called China Vanke. And China Vanke was, at least it was, one of the last investment-grade property developers over there. And it's a huge developer, even bigger than Evergrande and Country Garden. Because of its status, the Chinese government has been, let's just say, interested in making sure that it doesn't default. In fact, it isn't just the Chinese government interested. The Chinese government is one of its largest shareholders. But just recently, the value of its bonds, especially its dollar bonds trading outside of China, have plummeted. The long-term bonds have plummeted because the market is becoming increasingly pessimistic about China Vanke's ability to pay back all of its debts. Liquidity does seem to be a rising issue. Moody's just recently downgrade the company to junk status. But S&P and Fitch, they still have Vanke as one notch above junk in investment grade, and it's likely they're going to downgrade it too. So there'll be another fallen angel over there in China. But as far as Chinese banks are concerned, this is what might be concerning them. In fact, I'm sure it is. Vanke, whose major shareholder is a state-owned firm based in Shenzhen, has been seen as a bellwether for government support of major developers. The company received rare backing from local regulators and officials last year following a drop in its bond prices over worries about the nation's ailing property sector. And this is just a couple days ago. The developer is in state-coordinated talks with banks on a debt swap, and its major creditor banks are said to be considering a plan to swap bond holdings worth tens of billions of yuan in principal into secured debt. And this is what Bloomberg is reporting. So if you're a Chinese bank, a major bank, and the government says, hey, you're going to work with us on this major China Vanke, this major state-owned firm or partially state-owned firm, you're going to work with us to make sure that the debt continues to get service and the company continues to get funded, you're looking at a lot of bad prospects. And so as a Chinese bank, you're thinking, I'm going to have to do that with this company. Am I going to have to do it with this company? I'm going to have to do it with this company. I better start becoming more and more defensive because I'm about to take a whole lot of bad loans onto my books and somehow try to work them out. Now, they say this debt swap is swapping billions in bonds into secured debt, which is not necessarily all that much better because that would just mean you end up with collateral that's likely illiquid that maybe you end up having to manage. Are Chinese banks about to experience what US and European banks did 16, 17 years ago by becoming property owners? That's not a good sign or a good development for them either. So as you look into this real estate mess and the economy that continues to not respond, it's understandable why Chinese banks would say thanks but no thanks to all of the stimulus from the PBOC and the government. Of course, with all of this going on, the financial markets remain, well, somewhat of a mess. China's yuan, the currency, is quite conspicuously and suspiciously stuck just above 720 to the US dollar. It's been around 719 since February 2nd. Straight through the Golden Week and on afterward, it managed to rise to the 718s, which is a tiny bit, March 18th through the 13th, so earlier this week, but right back to 719s the past 2 days, which says Chinese Central Bank, along with the big policy banks, are likely manipulating the currency because they realize without their support, the currency would be falling at a particularly thorny time in China's struggles against all of these problems. They don't want the currency falling because they know the currency would fall, which, as we know around here at Eurodollar University, CNY down equals bad. Well, CNY sideways equals just as bad. And it's extended into the Chinese government bond market. I noted recently how the 10-year Chinese government bond, central government bond, hit a 20-year low yield of 236. That was earlier in March. It backed up just a little bit since then. It was 245 as of the 12th of March, a couple days ago. And even today, it's down around about 242. So low yields in Chinese government bonds, which means the same thing there as it does everywhere else. That's not stimulus. It's not a good sign. Growing demand for safety and liquidity that goes along with Chinese banks that don't want to lend. They're the ones buying all of these safe and liquid bonds. China's National People's Congress, that wrapped up, I think, earlier this week. It was held mostly last week, and it was a complete crap show. They came out with their target for the Chinese economy this year of around 5%. But Premier number two, Li Kang, said, "It's not easy for us to realize these targets. We need policy support and joint efforts from all fronts." And around 5%. Remember, Chinese GDP used to grow steadily in double digits. There was a time when it got below 7%, everybody was panicking. They used to think that back in the middle 2000s that anything less than 8% counted as a recession in China. Now they're shooting for around 5% for the second year in a row, realizing it's going to be much harder to achieve that target because they won't have the base effects of last year carried over to this year. And it wasn't just around 5% GDP. There's also other targets they come up with. Urban job creation was over 12 million, which was somewhat of an upgrade to around 12 million that was the target last year. The joblessness rate around 5%. And to help achieve these targets that Pan Gongsheng was said were achievable, the government pledged an ultra-long bond issuance of 1 trillion CNY, which is only the fourth time in the last 26 years the Chinese have done something like that. Which sounds like, hey, the Chinese government's really stepping up here, but it's really basically all the same stuff. They're coming up with rate cuts and government bond stimulus and spending and all of the stuff that they've been doing all along that hasn't worked. Because it doesn't sound like they know what they're going to do. Sounds like there's more uncertainty at the party and policy level than there is even in the marketplace. And one note about that, Xi Jinping has continued to completely erase some of the norms and traditions of these policy gatherings, as well as to stamp his own name over everything, including a lack of a third plenum that was supposed to have been held last year in either October or November. Instead, the third plenum still hasn't happened, and it hasn't, to my knowledge, hasn't even been scheduled yet. And the third plenum is usually where they talk about the long-range reform agenda for China's economy. So that's already an alarm bell. And even at the National People's Congress last week, number two, Li Kang, was supposed to have a press conference. That has been a 30-year or near 30-year tradition in China, and it didn't happen either. Li Kang, no press conference, no word. And the press conference was the one time that the Chinese media got to ask questions on the economy from a senior level Chinese official. So again, it looks like as far as the economy goes, it doesn't seem as if the Chinese government really knows what they're going to do here. At the same time, Xi Jinping is like, screw this, I know what I'm going to do. I've been engaging in these purges. I've been planting loyalists all over the party and therefore the government. I'm not necessarily as concerned about the downside here because I've covered my behind. Well, the Chinese banking system, the Chinese economy, those outside of China, who look at China as rightfully as the biggest risk to the world, don't have the luxury of maybe Xi Jinping, who's consolidated his power already, of sitting back and saying, well, okay, let's just see where this goes. That's certainly the message the banking system is sending. So as I said, China is the world's biggest risk, and data point after data point, month after month, policy gathering after policy gathering, they continue to prove that to be correct. So as China is the largest risk, I hate to say it, the risk of a disorderly unwind has actually grown. It's become material because when the banking system refusing all invitations that are probably not so polite from the government, it tells you just how serious they see the situation. The real estate sector, households are not borrowing. Banks are not lending. The real estate issue is not going away. It is getting worse. Home prices falling. And this is in the face of all the stuff that Beijing has come up with so far. So where is all of this going? Well, we can't say for sure. We cannot rule out a disorderly unwind. Unfortunately, I wish that wasn't the case, but as I said, they keep proving that it is. Looking ahead, looking much farther ahead at more optimistic monetary stuff, the crypto revolution, the real one. I just had a really good conversation with Andy Bromberg about just that, and that's the video linked below. As always, I thank you very much for joining me. Huge thank you, Eurodollar University members and subscribers. And until next time, take care.